Objects in Chuck Norris's rearview mirrors are closer to death than they appear. Welcome to my dojo. This is Kung Fu Pizza Party, and I'm your host, Brandon Knight. And today, as we continue on with Chuck Norris Week, a celebration of the ultimate apex predator, get bent, sharks. That should be part of the tagline now. Get bent, sharks. Here today to continue our celebration, I'm here to review 1981's An Eye for an Eye. Here on Kung Fu Pizza Party, I seek to deliver high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and serve up some wisdom one slice at a time. An Eye for an Eye is a unique installment in the film catalog of Chuck Norris. In a different way than Silent Rage is. Silent Rage came out the next year, and it's a unique installment in his filmography due to the fact that it's like a horror movie, right? It's unique. It's the one like horror movie that he did. An Eye for an Eye is a unique installment in his filmography, as it kind of marks this like transitional piece within his career. It's still very early in his career. We're just 3 years removed from Good Guys Wear Black. So, but it's a very transitional film in the sense that you have a lot of different Chuck Norris typical elements that do show up in his films, kind of still in like the working it out stages. Originally, Good Guys Wear Black was intended to be the launch of a series of films. That ended up not happening. But there is something about An Eye for an Eye that it does feel like a bit of a spiritual successor, probably due in large part to the fact that Chuck Norris is driving around cool, fast cars and wearing driving leather gloves. Because there for a while, we just really wanted to watch Chuck Norris drive, you know, like Breaker Breaker, like, or Good Guys Wear Black. But like, we just really liked watching him drive, I guess. That was a whole thing there for a while. But also, it resembles Good Guys Wear Black more than just he's wearing driving gloves while driving cool cars. But it's a little bit more of a drama, let's show off Chuck Norris's acting skills more than it is a mindless action film. That being said, some of his usual hallmarks of his films to come are also present in this movie. Again, it feels transitional. It feels transitional because it's got war on drugs. He's a local law enforcement officer. Like, there's bits of what his career is going to be and what it has been all present within this film, minus the fact that I don't think there's ever a reference to whether or not he's a Vietnam vet, because that's usually something that runs throughout a lot of his movies. If An Eye for an Eye is the spiritual sequel to Good Guys Wear Black, then it may also be the spiritual prequel. I don't know if that's a thing, but the spiritual prequel to Lone Wolf McQuade, which is going to come out in about 2 more years from when this film originally came out. And I say that because they're both directed by the same guy, Steve Carver. Steve Carver is the director on both An Eye for an Eye and Lone Wolf McQuade. And knowing how successful and well done Lone Wolf McQuade is, this then kind of plays a little bit more as like the feeling out. We're getting to know Steve and Chuck. They're kind of, I now pronounce you Chuck and Steve, are now, they're just kind of getting to know each other. Chuck's still kind of trying to figure out his career a little bit, who he's going to play. And then it's all the ships at sea when we get to Lone Wolf McQuade. An Eye for an Eye has an outright stacked B-movie action cast. This movie is stacked top to bottom. And I'm not even being like, this is not a bit. Like, it is an impressively casted film. So we have Chuck Norris here, and he's playing a undercover narcotics agent who is trying to blow open a case on heroin being smuggled into the West Coast. I don't think they really specify which part of the West Coast, but the West Coast, apparently, one part of it has some heroin coming in. And him and his partner are set up, and his partner is subsequently killed in this trap. And afterwards, Chuck ends up resigning from the police force. The guy who sets him up, this stool pigeon, if you will, who will later continue his stool pigeon ways and help out Chuck Norris later on as he continues to investigate, is played by Mel Novak, which is quite possibly a name that you don't know, but I promise you, if you've watched enough kung fu movies and enough 70s action films, you've probably seen him at some point, and I can assure you, you've heard me talk about him at least once here on the show. He was a stuntman known for, well, obviously doing his own stunts, but he starred as, well, stars might be a strong word, but he was typically a B-movie actor, character actor in B-movies, playing various roles in films like Game of Death and Black Belt Jones, you know, the Jim Kelly movie with the beach scene. And he happens to be one of the very stereotypical Italian mobsters in that movie. So, yeah, I actually have seen Mel in action before, and he was very adamant about doing his own stunts. And he's definitely not the biggest name star in this movie, but I always like to point out the people who do their own stunts, because stunt work is very dangerous, and those people don't get enough credit for what they do. Chuck Norris does resign, though, from his police position to arguably the coolest person on the planet. No, not Steve McQueen, though that was a good guess, listener. No, blaxploitation genre star legend Richard Roundtree. Shaft. Shaft is Chuck Norris's boss in this movie. And actually, this movie came out 1 year away from, came out 1 year before One Down, Two to Go, which stars Richard Roundtree, Jim Kelly, Jim Brown, and Fred the Hammer Williamson. It brought all of them together for one big action-packed film. Yeah, he plays Captain Steve, I believe. Something really simple like that. Captain Stevens. And the entire time, this movie is doing its absolute best to make you think that Captain Stevens is actually an inside guy for these people who are smuggling heroin into the West Coast, because how else would they know about this super secret undercover plot if it wasn't for the fact that maybe there's somebody working on the inside, working for the bad guys in the police department? And thank God the only black man in the entire film wasn't actually the bad guy. Unfortunately, though, we never do get a fight scene between Chuck Norris and Richard Roundtree, which may be the biggest sin of this movie. After Chuck Norris's partner is killed in this trap drug deal situation, the partner's girlfriend, who was a reporter for the local news outlet, who was working on news stories surrounding the influx of heroin in the community, she was murdered. And she was actually murdered by, not actually, but she was murdered by Professor Tanaka. Professor Tanaka, who my wife was watching this movie with me off and on. And I asked Claire, I was like, can you tell that guy is a professional wrestler? And she's, yeah, everything about him definitely screams professional wrestler. Professor Tanaka was a professional wrestler, spent a lot of time with the WWWF, the oldest forerunner to what we now know as the WWE. He was a multiple-time tag team champion with Mr. Fuji, which may be a name that casual wrestling fans or wrestling fans who have fallen off the wagon have might recognize Mr. Fuji. He basically plays like the final boss muscle for the bad guys in this movie, and he's just, you know, big towering individual. He's definitely not as big as Andre the Giant, but you do kind of get like on the Andre the Giant, the Big Show. What was the one guy? Not Braun Strowman, though he is a big guy, but there's another guy, Big John Stowman or something like that, is just like one of these big dude wrestlers, and you definitely feel that in the movie as he's just like clubbing blows, choking people, things like that. And you do get a fight between him and Chuck Norris. Thankfully, at least they gave us that fight scene. So Chuck Norris's partner, the partner's girlfriend, both killed. Now this mysterious group is coming after Chuck Norris, Chuck Norris's new girlfriend, who you get to watch have a steamy shower sex scene with Chuck Norris, because that's something we've always wanted to see. Chuck Norris in the shower. Yeah. So now these mysterious bad guys are coming after Chuck, his new girlfriend, and the murdered partner's girlfriend's dad, which seems like brother's former roommate, and that makes us nothing. Shout out to Spaceballs. So excited for Spaceball 2. Anyway, the murdered partner girlfriend's dad was also the guy who mentored Chuck Norris in the martial arts. And he is played by Maku. Maku was a long time, I want to say 50-year veteran of stage, small screen and the big screen. Japanese-American actor and martial artist. You get fight scenes with him and Professor Tanaka in the film. It's a lot of fun. Like, he's an older guy by this point in his career. And so there's a lot of like, Chuck Norris helps him out, and he's like, I had that handled. Why are you helping me? Like, I got this. I can handle these young guys. A lot of those kind of ribs are like, since he was like Chuck Norris's master at one point in time, Maku is like, oh, that kick was sloppy. You know, just like really picking at Chuck Norris. He's not the comic relief. Like, oh, here's the wacky Asian father. It's nothing like that, but he does provide some lighthearted moments in this film. There's one more legendary actor who needs no introduction whatsoever who is in this movie. Unfortunately, for those of you who have not seen An Eye for an Eye, saying this actor's name is kind of like saying Sean Bean. You kind of know what role he's going to play. Christopher Lee is in this movie. That's right, listeners. Count Dooku, Count Dracula, Willy Wonka's dad, Saruman. He's in this movie. The man with the golden gun is in this movie. And yes, Chuck Norris does almost kill him. There is not a single person that Christopher Lee has not worked with. If you told me right now that there was some unused footage, not AI, not anything like that, but like unused footage of Christopher Lee, and they're going to release it for a movie, but by the way, it's him and Mr. Beast in a buddy comedy cop film, I totally believe you, because the man has worked with everybody. It really is a very good cast. Just the, you know, I threw a couple additional names in there, but like just having Chuck Norris, Richard Roundtree, Christopher Lee, and Maku in the movie alone is already like, holy cow, that's so cool. It obviously, it's nowhere near the level of Bruce Lee versus Chuck Norris in the Coliseum, right? Like, nothing will ever really top that. But like, from this movie, like I said, it's 1981, but late 70s, early 80s action movie standards, like, that's amazing to get all four of those guys in the same movie. And speaking of action, one thing I really liked about An Eye for an Eye was the fight choreography. Every martial artist actor has their bread and butter. If JCVD's in a movie, guess what? He's doing the splits and punching a dude in the ding dong. If, who's another one? Yeah, you know, Jackie Chan, yeah, you know, especially like his, you know, if Jackie Chan's in the movie, you know, if it's an older one, he's doing some wacky kung fu style. If it's a newer one, guess what? There are ladders and people are going to get hit with them. You know, like everybody has like their thing. Everybody has their own fighting style. And some are flashier than others. Chuck Norris, and I say this with caution, knowing that there is a very good chance that I am going to get roundhouse kicked from beyond the grave. Somebody write that down. That's going to be the title of my indie horror martial art movie, Roundhouse Kicked from Beyond the Grave. Anyway, I'm going to get roundhouse kicked from beyond the grave for saying this, but Chuck Norris' fighting style is effective, but very simple. I feel like, especially with these earlier movies, that his fight moveset is pretty repetitive. Roundhouse kick, spinning back kick or hook kick, switch front kick. It's kind of like boom, boom, boom. And I've never taken Tang Soo-do, so I don't know this for a fact, but is my understanding from what I have observed of it is that it is a very like straightforward, simple, but effective fighting style. Keep in mind, it is the inspiration for the fighting style that Cobra Kai uses in the Karate Kid franchise. So like you're familiar with it. It's no nonsense. It's straight to the point. It's not very flashy, and that's okay. Not every martial art has to be flashy. In a movie, though, it sometimes, with Chuck Norris, again, it's really great to see him fight, but sometimes it does feel a little repetitive. One thing I really liked about An Eye for an Eye is the fact that they really played with his moveset in the fight sequences. Yeah, he does his kicks because that's what we want to see. We want to see him kick people in the face after all. But you also get like spinning back elbows, spinning back fists. You know, he's like strangling guys and breaking necks. He's even doing like rolling thunder, which is this move where you kind of like tuck down and roll. And as you're going through the rolling like somersault motion, you bring your foot up and kick people. Like they're really playing with it in a way that it doesn't feel like they're trying to make him flashy, but just like letting him expand beyond the norm a bit. And that was really refreshing because, again, he's a great, obviously no one is here. No one would dare to say that Chuck Norris wasn't that good of a fighter. He was. He's a champion, literal champion. But in the movies, it does feel a bit repetitive sometimes. So I really enjoyed seeing him kind of expand and try some other things and get to do some other moves, including, you know, the good old fashioned karate chop, judo chop, whatever you, term you prefer for that move. So with all of that in mind, between the cast, the story, which is very comic booky, like I didn't even bring up the fact that the people smuggling the drugs is the Chinese triad, and it's like a whole thing. It's not wacky, but it is a little comic book. There was like a critic review from way back when the movie first came out that it was like a comic strip, just like how things would escalate and the twists and turns the movie would take. So you would expect with like the story, the cast, especially the fight choreography, and the fact that this movie grossed $12 million off of a $4 million budget, that like it was successful and a really good movie. So about that. Yeah, this is one of the few times here on the show, maybe the first time, I don't know, but one of the few times here on the show where I'm actually kind of agreeing with the critics on this one. This movie was panned and continues to be panned, and I definitely agree with the critic's view on this film. I guarantee that there will be people out there who are like, oh, An Eye for an Eye, best Chuck Norris movie. I love that movie. Like, and that's fine. If you like this one, that's fine. Like, I don't think the movie is bad. What is it that the kids say nowadays? It's missing the sauce. There's something missing, which is crazy seeing how the cast lineup is. But it's like the whole time, you know, these situations keep getting worse for Chuck. You know, friend gets murdered, friend's girlfriend gets murdered. They're all, you know, this mysterious group is like coming after him and like people that he cares about. And like, it just keeps escalating. And you, I don't know if you saw the poster. I posted it on Instagram. But like between that and the poster, you would think that this movie is going to become an absolute bloodbath. And it's not. For as good as the fight choreography is, it's the fight scenes in this movie are few and far between. Much like The Babadook. Here, you're getting another movie review. This movie has a lot in common with The Babadook, where the final 10 minutes, the final conclusion of the movie is really good. I just don't know if it's really worth the hour and 30 minutes to get to that part. Like, was The Babadook and An Eye for an Eye a bad movie? No, it's not bad. The story is fine. I just don't know. It was lacking in execution. This is also maybe one of the textbook examples of just how dang wooden Chuck Norris could be as an actor. Some critics were pointing out, this is wild to hear from critics, but some critics at the time were pointing out how like this was trying to be a drama where already by this point, people, critics included, just wanted to see Chuck Norris kick people in the face. That's all we wanted. Like, that's all we needed at that point already. And so this is like one of the few, if not the only, action movie where critics were like, it needed less plot and more action. And in a way, I agree with that. It's not boring, but I don't want to just watch Chuck Norris walk around and think about things, you know? Also, Chuck Norris's character, totally not motivated enough. Not like in a character arc way, but just like was really chill about things that he totally should have like picked up as like, oh, my friend's girlfriend is totally about ready to get murdered. I should probably go do something about that. An Eye for an Eye doesn't have a critic score on Rotten Tomatoes. It does have a 39% viewer rating. Metacritic has it right around a 33%. Letterboxd, which you can follow the show over there at Kung Fu Pizza, PRTY. The average score is 3 out of 5 stars. IMDb has it like at 5.6 out of 10 stars. And I would say I would probably find myself somewhere around there. I think I gave this movie 3 stars because, again, it wasn't bad and the payoff was not completely disappointing, but it was just like, it was just missing like a little bit of intensity. It was, you're just like waiting for, I mean, this movie is like, it's like, you know, decades down the road, but like you're kind of waiting for the John Wick moment, you know, the line from the original, people keep asking me if I'm back, I'm thinking I'm back. Like I'm waiting for that moment. And you know, already within film history, this movie is a year removed from the second Death Wish film. We're halfway through the Dirty Harry film franchise. So like movies that kind of glorify, even though they weren't supposed to with Death Wish, these movies that kind of glorify vigilantism, vigilante cops, like that's already in the mainstream and is some, and in the B film era and, or area, and you know, people want that. So I don't know why they didn't just go that route. Again, from the poster alone, you would expect this is going to be a neck snapping good time with Chuck Norris, but it's not, and it's a bit of a letdown for that. So critic score wise, yeah, it's somewhere between bad and mid. I kind of found myself more in like the mid category because it, again, is not, It doesn't do anything wrong per se. It's a watchable film. It's just maybe to get to the questions I normally ask here on the show. Would I watch An Eye for an Eye again? I mean, I would probably pick several other Chuck Norris films before I go back to this one. And even if I did, I would just go on YouTube and look up the two awesome fight scenes in the movie and just be satisfied. And would I own a physical media copy of it? The poster is cool. Like, that's kind of an incentive to own something that's got the poster on it. But honestly, like, I don't feel like I need this. And the good news for you listeners is that if still by the end of this, you're like, I still want to check it out, which you totally should based off of the cast, just to see Chuck Norris interact with Richard Roundtree and freaking Christopher Lee, you should probably go check it out. It is one of those, I swear this is the case with all Chuck Norris movies. It is one of those that it's like, it's on, I watched it on Tubi, it's on Roku, Pluto TV, Fossum. It's easily accessible. Go check it out. Well, thanks for listening to today's episode. We got a couple days left on Chuck Norris Week, so make sure you follow the show on Instagram to see your daily Chuck Norris fact. And if you missed it, make sure you check out the episode that came out earlier this week where I dive into the history of the Chuck Norris fact meme. It's a wild ride and was also the birthplace of Slenderman. Same forum. Well, same website. Thanks for listening. If you haven't yet already, please rate and review this show wherever you get your podcast. Pass this episode along to a friend. And check out the other shows here on the Amazon Podcast Network, like Page and Pixel, Why I Don't Like, and Systematic Geekology, along with my sister show, My Seminary Life. And that's it. I've basically plugged everything else. Cool. Thanks for listening. This has been Kung Fu Pizza Party, where I've delivered high-flying action in 30 minutes or less and served up some wisdom one slice at a time.